This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
Jay Buhner just punched me in the kidney.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines studio.
On Seattle Sports.
We're going to do you on the interview.
That really worked that way, Sherm. This is a show that has my name on it.
It kind of does, though.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Hello!
All right, final hour here, Brock and Salk show on Seattle Sports, 710seattlesports.com. We're going to go to Pittsburgh in 30 minutes, talk to Jerry Dulac, who has been the beat writer for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Covers the Steelers and golf, Maura. He's their PGA Tour. So if we run out of things to talk about with the Steelers and their sort of weird situation with Russ, etc., then we can certainly just pivot and talk about Scottie Scheffler if we need to and what he's doing right now. I was seeing, so just quickly on golf, you mentioned that Scheffler won the Players, right? And so that's his second time in a row winning the Players, which has never happened before. But it was also the second tournament in a row he won, and because he won last week as well, right, at the Arnold Palmer. Wyndham Clark was the runner-up in both of those two events.
Okay.
I was reading today, a guy said he went through 50 years of PGA Tour results and had yet to find two tournaments in a row that were won by the same person with the same runner-up. It's never
just
happened.
That much swing. And
isn't that crazy?
Bad pun, but yeah, there's that much difference and variance.
That much variance? Yeah.
Wow.
I thought that's kind of interesting that it has changed that much. Anyway, it is Brock and Salk. It is Seattle Sports, and we are powered by Simply Seattle here on the show. Before we do Gary Dulac and talk through the Russ situation, I just wanted to ask each of you just kind of where you're at right now today with the Seahawks at quarterback. How are you feeling about the Seahawks quarterback room? They kept Geno Smith. They let Drew Lock go. They traded for Sam Howell. They didn't trade for Justin Fields. How do you feel about it today?
Impermanent. Like, it feels like we're...
You feel impermanent.
Impermanent, yeah. Like, we're bridging, waiting. Like, it doesn't feel like we have the quarterback of the future, and this is just where we're at for the short term.
Kind of feel like the Charlie Whitehurst, Matt Hasselbeck season or two
until they're going to be able to
Tavares Jackson
until
that era.
Yeah until the next big talent really shows itself.
Treading water, trying to do the best you can.
Treading
until
water sounds bad, but yeah,
okay.
Like, I don't feel like this is the... Do you think you're going to win a Super Bowl with either of these quarterbacks?
You prefer a bit more of a back float than treading water?
Sure, yes. Okay. We'll go with that.
Dead man's float. You ever do the dead man's float?
No.
Do you remember that?
No.
You had to learn that when I was a kid. I don't know whether they still do that, but like in order to swim in the deeper end of the pool, you had to do the dead man's float.
No.
Where you would like float head down. It's like, why would I ever do this if something happened to me?
Lessons. Yeah, like that wasn't a thing.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I wasn't buoyant enough for it or something. Maura, how are you feeling today about the Seahawks at quarterback, given those sort of three or four decisions they've made?
I think
that says it all.
No, I'm pretty
seriously.
No, I'm actually pretty optimistic for this season. I don't think it's going to be like a complete what when we were predicting wins last week. I think we had some people saying they think only like four or five. I think that they'll do better than that, but I do think that in order to kind of get over that hump and be a team that wins more than one playoff game or just makes the playoffs and loses, I think that's going to take a little bit longer. Mm. And I do think we've talked about a lot of these short-term deals kind of show that they're waiting to see how this year plays out, but I think they're also putting a lot of stock into what they can do in the future.
Yeah, it does feel like everything is sort of up in the air right now, I think is Justin. I like your word of impermanent. I'm not even sure if that's a real word, but I like it. I think it's a real word. And regardless of whether it is, it absolutely fits. And Maura, you're bringing up all the short term deals they have around. I totally agree.
But it's not like they're signing total scrubs that you've never heard. Like they're signing guys with upside.
Yes,
but they're not, you know, fully investing in them for the future. They're going to see how things play out.
Yeah, I think that's very well said. They're not tanking. It's very clear. They are not tanking. They are not trying to be bad.
Right.
Not at all. They are bringing in quality players that they like, that they think can have a significant positive effect on the direction of the team for this year. But they're also not making a lot of long-term investments in anybody. They haven't invested in anybody for more than 3 years, and very few for even three. So there does seem to be a lot of like, hey, we're just kind of trying to figure out what's going on, like an animal walking into a room for the first time, sort of looking around like, all right, I'm going to check this thing out.
Yeah, it is a real thing. Impermanence, also known as the philosophical problem. With an M, yeah.
Oh, with an M.
Yeah,
okay.
Impermanence, also known as the philosophical problem of change.
Interesting. You think this is a philosophical problem with change?
A philosophical problem of change?
Yeah.
I mean, we don't know how this coaching staff is going to do with any of this. Like, yeah, I feel like this is probably, let's get through this first year, see what we have with what we have.
But aren't you just excited? I'm just excited for the change itself because it felt like you were stuck just in a, like, never-ending limbo.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, that's what limbo is. We're having trouble with words
this
segment.
Yeah, that's okay.
No, or we're not.
Just
as words fine. But,
yeah.
Yeah, I felt like you were just kind of doing the same middling thing over and over again. And I'm just excited for the change.
I agree with that. I'm excited to see change sometimes even just for the sake of it being change and to do things a little bit differently. I am concerned that this is not necessarily a way out of limbo. That is as of today, my chief Seahawk concern. And it's, by the way, balanced by a lot of real positives. I hope nobody is hearing me come on and saying, I don't like what they've done. This is a problem. I'm not saying any of that. I kind of like what they've done. Again, there's no individual move they've made where I'm like, yeah, I don't think so.
Right.
I mean, the Howell one, I think they gave up too much. I will say that. I think they gave up too much for Sam Howell. But if he turns out to be great, then obviously they didn't give up that much at all. I think just based on what we've seen so far and what he's going to do this year, et cetera, I feel like they gave up a little too much on Sam Howell. The biggest criticism I could come up with for the Seahawks offseason thus far and everything else they've done. The only sort of back of my mind nagging concern I have is that it feels like this is not necessarily an immediate path out of limbo.
Yes. Are you skewed now with a little bit of the recency bias of what they gave up for Fields?
Yeah. Well, no. I mean, I felt this way last week.
You did. Like,
yeah. I mean, Brock and I were talking about it. I felt like, really hate giving up the third. Yeah. I really hated giving up the third round pick. That really kind of stuck with me. Ultimately, again, if he's great, it won't matter. And, you know, until the draft goes down and all the other trades and everything else that goes with it, you know, this is still just a part in the process. So you're sort of judging something that's incomplete. But, you know, we have to be on the air every day until the draft. So we're going to judge based on what we know right now with the opportunity and understanding that could change down the line. I thought they gave up a little too much for Howell, but I don't have any problems with them going with Howell over Fields. If they think he's got the better fit for the type of scheme that Ryan Grubb run, cool. Great. Let's see what this kid's got. There's a lot of upside there, obviously, and some risk, but there's clearly some upside. And if they can coach out some of the problems and get him moving in the right direction, they may have scored. This may be the steal of the century. But they're also not, like, committing to him. And so until you find a guy that you're truly willing to, like, commit to at the quarterback spot, it's going to feel like you're in limbo. And until you have like a nucleus on the front of, you know, the line of scrimmage that you feel comfortable with, that's going to change the style and the success, then you're going to feel a little bit in limbo.
Yeah, you're teetering.
Then that's going to continue to be my challenge here with the Seahawks. And hopefully they can get past that.
But if they draft a quarterback, I mean, we don't think they're going to move up anymore to get one of the top four in the draft or anything like that. But if they draft a quarterback, if they end up with Michael Penix or someone that we know, are you going to feel differently about that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I would, because then you're sort of taking a stand and saying, all right, we're going to try to sink or swim with whatever this guy can do. We're going to take a chance on and hope, and we believe he's the right guy. I don't think it's going to happen now. As much as a week ago, I would have said, I think they're drafting a quarterback this year. I don't think they are now. And it really feels to me like John looked at the situation and said, I can't get the guys I want. I just don't have the resources to do it. So let's get Howell, punt on this year in terms of a quarterback, not on the season in general, and hope that we can find that guy in another way. But yeah, get out of limbo. That's the one sort of thing I hope they're able to do sooner rather than later. But like the changes and it impermanence. See, we've learned a little something here today. We'll come back with everything you need to know, including some news on what the Mariners are doing today with two different games. And they did release one interesting name today who will not be back with the team. That's next on Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Yeah, let's start with the Mariners this time. They had a really good weekend. We'll get to it in a moment. They are continuing to make moves as they come down the final stretch. 10 days to go before opening day next Thursday. Cole Tucker released today. I'm sorry to tell you guys. I know everyone was excited about the potential for the Cole Tucker era, mostly just because of who he's married to. And so, Vanessa Hudgens is not going to be spending any time in Seattle this year. I'm sorry to tell you. He's been released.
There were some good tweets that the baby was going to be born in Tacoma.
That would have been exciting.
I can tell how excited you are.
It would have been so exciting. No, my kids will be bummed. They love High School Musicals and 2 and 3 and all the other High School Musical spinoffs. So, he's been released. They did have a really good weekend, though. Man, they hit the heck out of the ball. Felt like everybody had a hit or a home run or multiple hits or something this weekend. But Jorge Polanco was certainly right at the top of any list.
There goes Julio. Swinging a drive by Polanco into the gap right center field. And this one is on the track and off the wall and a hop. Julio now heading for third, being waved in by Manny. The throw-in is cut off. No relay to the plate. The ball is dropped out there by Remillard. Julio scores. Polanco in at second base, standing up with an RBI double. And the Mariners lead the White Sox 1-0.
I really like the idea of somebody hitting doubles with Julio on base. I got to tell you, we spent some time earlier talking about how the Mariners have not had enough doubles recently. Julio on first, guy hitting a double, means an opportunity to try to watch Julio score from first on a double. I'm into that. That's great baseball visual right there, and hopefully something we'll see a lot more of this season. On the pitching side, well, that went equally well. They were phenomenal. Logan Gilbert yesterday, Luis Castillo on Saturday.
The wind-up and the 2-2 pitch. Swing and a miss and a fastball for strike three. Fletcher strikes out. 5 strikeouts for Luis Castillo, and I believe his work is going to be done on the afternoon. We go to the bottom of the fifth inning, halfway point. Nice ovation for The Rock as he walks off the field.
For a good reason, Luis Castillo was nasty. And all in all, a very, very good weekend. Shannon and I spoke. She agrees that Cody Bolton probably is the inside track for one of the two open bullpen spots. Who gets the other one? Well, we're going to see a whole bunch of guys pitch today, including Ryan Stanek in the A game. Bryce Miller bumped over to the B game. He won't face Texas. Why? Well, they don't want Texas to get a chance to see him in the offseason or in the spring training here. But also an opportunity for Scott to see more of these bullpen guys who are competing for that final role. So they will all pitch today, and hopefully a decision coming sooner rather than later on that final spot.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Seahawks busy still this weekend trying to fill out that roster. They needed another linebacker in the room, and they got one. A couple days after signing Tyrell Dodson from the Bills, they stay in the AFC East to also get a Miami Dolphin linebacker, now Jerome Baker, who will join him on a 1-year, $7 million deal. Both guys are young, 27, 25 years old. Both guys are known to be very good in coverage, more speedy linebackers maybe than what the Seahawks have had. And both guys are on short-term deals, which means they are kind of on prove it. Let's see what you got and try to figure it out down the road whether or not you're going to be a good fit here in Seattle. And then, is anybody else noticing the sort of pro football focus connection with everything the Seahawks are doing? It sure seems like they're taking the pro football focus grade seriously, or maybe they're just on the same page. But whether it's Noah Fant or Pharaoh Brown or these two linebackers or Rashawn Jenkins, just every move they've made this offseason sure seems to fit pretty well with what pro football focus sees as some value on that chart. And so, I don't know exactly what that means other than it's just sort of an observation watching them so far here in the offseason.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
And the Kraken had just another brutal, brutal weekend. They've dropped 4 straight now, all at home. This season has essentially gotten away from them. And it's too bad because it started with a lot of promise coming off of the playoffs last year. Not even just the playoffs, but a nice playoff, victory over Denver, over Colorado, and kind of the excitement. Game 7, it felt like maybe there was an opportunity for them to do something. And instead, it's really just been the opposite. Just an incredibly disappointing season for them, and they're going to find themselves, I think, at a crossroads now this offseason trying to figure out what to do next. Meanwhile, the Cougs are going to the tournament. Of course, they are going to be a 7-seed 7-10 matchup against Drake on Thursday in Omaha. Gonzaga 5-12 matchup with McNeese State Thursday in Salt Lake City, and Gonzaga women's team going to be in the tournament as well. They are a 4-seed, and that is everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour here on the Brock and Salk Show.
Man, really ruined my day there with Cole Tucker.
Oh, I know. Sorry, buddy. I know that you really had your heart set on him. Seemed like a nice guy. He was walking around camp.
I like that flow. I liked his hair.
He does have nice hair. I totally agree with that. I'm sorry. Yeah. Salk, don't get too excited. It's only spring training. Thank you for the reminder because I had forgotten.
Oh, you mean we can't project a whole season?
No, and I had forgotten about that. It's my fault. I kept getting so excited about spring training and the numbers and the stats that I actually projected them out onto the regular season and really, quite frankly, into the postseason. Yeah, well, so thank you, 425. Appreciate the reminder that it's only spring training because I need that. I can, as you know, kind of get myself a little too excited. It is just spring training, but man, are they hitting the snot out of the ball right now. So we'll see. We'll see how that translates. Shannon is a good interview to go back and listen to as she talked through a lot of what they're trying to do strategy-wise. And it is interesting to hear her say they want to be more aggressive. There is a part of me that cringes when I hear that. Not going to lie. There's a part of me that hears aggressive and is like, oh, man. A lot of swing and miss early in counts is a recipe for just getting mowed down by a really good starting pitcher. But the flip side of it is I don't know that the value is there the way it used to be in trying to get the starter out. Some of the third, fourth, fifth starters in the league, you're better to leave them in and try to get your runs in the middle innings against them than you are worrying about the bullpen who's going to come in afterwards with, you know, 12 guys blowing 98 miles an hour with a nasty hook. Like, no thanks. I don't want to mess around with that. They're just going to bring out one after another after another. Maybe the starter's only throwing 93, 94, and I got a shot. So, yeah, I'm curious to see what that looks like and how being aggressive earlier in counts will help. And also, you know, this idea of not just looking for the long ball as much, but trying to play a little bit more baseball and use the whole field. So that's the strategy. We'll see whether or not they're able to pull it off. Okay, it is going to be chaos, I think. Maybe he'll come on and be like, oh, no, they got this all set. But it sure feels like chaos in Pittsburgh right now. Russell Wilson, Justin Fields, Kenny Pickett on the way out, Mike Tomlin playing, you know, coaching for his job security. What the heck is going on there and what's it going to look like? We're going to go to the Steel City next. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
What the heck is going on in Pittsburgh? This is such a fun story. Just trying to figure out what that quarterback room is going to look like. And just like last year, we spent a lot of time following what was going on in Denver and watching the implosion. You know, the saga of Russell Wilson continues to be of interest, certainly to me, and I'm guessing I'm not alone. And it took an interesting twist over the weekend with the acquisition of Justin Fields. So I want to find out what's going on there. Jerry Dulac going to join us now from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Covers the Steelers and golf. So maybe if we have a few minutes at the end, we can talk about Scottie Scheffler's just continued dominance. But Jerry, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, good to be with you, and all's well here. A lot of excitement, a lot of turbulence in that quarterback room.
Yeah, no kidding. So what do you think the plan is?
Well, the plan is that I've been told is that Russell Wilson is going to be the starter. And while that was kind of up in the air while Kenny Pickett was here, I think everybody assumed that it was going to be Russell Wilson. But when they traded for Justin Fields, apparently they have told him he is coming in to be Russell Wilson's backup, that there is no open competition or anything like that. And so that's kind of the way they're going to proceed. They'll still add a third quarterback, likely in the draft, but they're not taking any quarterback high or anything like that. You might see a day three quarterback go. That's their plan going forward, that Russell Wilson's going to be the starter and Justin Fields will be the backup.
How long have you been covering the Steelers?
I'm sorry, Nick.
How long have you been covering the Steelers?
Since on a regular basis, in which I was around them all the time and traveled with them since 1992, actually Bill Cowher's first year.
So it's been a little while. You've been covering the NFL for over 30 years. Russell Wilson is being paid less and is older. Justin Fields is being paid more and is younger. How long do you think that lasts where Russell Wilson is the starter and Justin Fields is the determined backup?
Well, it'll last as long as Russell Wilson produces. And I think that's not only their plan. I think that's what they believe will happen, barring injury, of course. But we'll see. We'll see. And we'll see what Russ still has left in the tank. You know, he threw 26 touchdowns last year and only 8 interceptions. Those 26 touchdowns are twice as many as Kenny Pickett threw in 2 seasons here. And that was one of Kenny Pickett's problems. Okay, I know he was a young quarterback, and I'm not going to sit here and diss on him. Mm-hmm. But he didn't produce a lot of points, and he didn't produce a lot of touchdowns through the air. And when Mason Rudolph took over in those last 4 games, you saw the offense all of a sudden, 34 points, 31 points, touchdowns through the air. It all of a sudden looked like an NFL offense, which it just struggled when Kenny Pickett was the quarterback. So I believe that, you know, that they believe Russell Wilson will be able to do that for them and put that element back into their offense. And, of course, they have a new offensive coordinator, Arthur Smith, that they're excited about. And, you know, so I think that their plan is that Russell Wilson will be the quarterback. I'll tell you this as well. You know, they signed him to that 1-year veteran minimum. But I will tell you, both sides want to do a longer deal. And they only did a 1-year deal because of the money the Broncos are still paying Russell Wilson. But their intention is to do a longer deal with Russell Wilson after, and that's Russell's intention, apparently, I've been told, after the season. So, you know, is it kind of a show me deal? You know, what's going to happen this year? You should, absolutely, to a degree, it certainly is. And then, though, but this just isn't a 1-year rental as far as both sides are concerned.
What happened with Kenny Pickett? We're talking to Jerry Dulac of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. What happened with Kenny Pickett? We read that he heard about the Russell signing on social media and then demanded a trade. What went down there?
Yeah, and that's exactly what it was. The minute they signed Russell Wilson, you know, he apparently, you know, he did not handle it very well. He was not happy about it. Complained to the Steelers about you know, about what was going on. And, you know, I'm sure he probably wanted out at that point. And so, you know, the Steelers saw some of this, you know, behavior, if you will, last year when he did not handle the situation with Mason Rudolph very well. Kenny Pickett had this sense that the job was his no matter what. And that when he was healthy, when he came back from his ankle surgery, that he would be the starter. Well, once Mason Rudolph got in and showed how the offense can perform, again, 34 points, 31 points up and down the field. And at that time of year, he won the three straight games that got him into the postseason. Well, they weren't going to make a change at that point to Kenny Pickett, mm-hmm. but he did not handle that very well. And he had this sense of entitlement, I guess, if you will, that the job was his. And so, you know, when they got to that Week 17 game out there in Seattle, and, you know, he was told they wanted him to be the third team, the emergency quarterback. And apparently he declined, refused, whatever word you want to use. And that was a little indication to them of the way he can possibly be. I think they were probably willing to overlook it, but when they saw how he handled Russell Wilson being signed, well, that was enough for them. You know, Kenny Pickett had 2 options when they signed Russell Wilson, or brought in Justin Fields, or whatever move they were going to make. And he could have been a flower who wilted, or he could have been a fighter who stood up and battled for his job. Well, I think you saw the answer to that. And we've always heard Mike Tomlin say he wants volunteers, not hostages. And they quickly moved on from him. I mean, it surprised everybody here in the city, and I'm sure around the league as well.
What's been the reception for Russ in Pittsburgh?
Well, there's probably a certain amount of skepticism because he's going to be 36 in November. But look, you're acquiring a 9-time Pro Bowl quarterback who's won a Super Bowl. And now you're bringing in Justin Fields, a former number one pick who they really liked when he was coming out. If Justin Fields was on the board in 2000 and what year would that have been? 21. Mm-hmm. When they picked, they would have taken Justin Fields, but he went number 11 and the Steelers had 24. So it was a moot point, but that's how much they liked him. If he was there, no matter who else was there, they would have taken him. So for them to go out and get him is not a surprise. But I think I don't think there's any question that right now their quarterback room is better than what it was a month ago, because Kenny Pickett was still a developing, unproven commodity. Yeah, he was 14-10 as a starter, but the offense never really flourished. I always thought Kenny Pickett was a nice quarterback, a quarterback you could win 10 games with, but I never thought he was a franchise elite quarterback. He was merely the best quarterback of an average draft class a couple years ago, and you see how that class has turned out. Yeah.
Last thing I want to ask you about here, and then let you be on your way, is Mike Tomlin, and you know, legendary coach. We know the Steelers don't make coaching changes very often, but at the end of last year, I know there were some rumors about it. How important is success this year for his job security?
Well, you know, every year that they don't win a playoff game, his job security comes into question, and I understand it, because the bottom line in this business is, especially for this franchise that's won 6 Super Bowls, is, you know, how are you doing? Are you getting to the postseason, and are you winning games? And they haven't won a postseason game in 7 years. It's the longest drought in their history. They've lost their last 5 postseason games. But unless Mike Tomlin wants to leave, or unless the bottom falls out, and I wouldn't call 10-7 the bottom falling out. I wouldn't call 9-8 the bottom falling out. But if that would happen, then maybe you might see that happen. But until then, I think Mike Tomlin is here as long as he wants to be here in Pittsburgh.
Well, and because that can affect absolutely how he handles the quarterbacks and how long the leash is over the course of the year. So it's going to be a fun situation. You know, we spent a lot of time talking to the folks in Denver over the last couple of years. They were very excited when Russ first arrived, and then that kind of waned on them pretty quickly. Right. And they were like, oh, all those things you told us might be problems turned out to be problems. So we're curious to see how it goes, and whether Russ has learned a little bit from his last 2 years and how he'll handle it now moving forward in Pittsburgh. But we appreciate you taking a few minutes with us, Jerry. Thank you, and continued success to you. We'll talk again.
You got it, man. Good being with you.
All right, there you go. There's Jerry Dulac, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And yeah, I mean, he's been covering that team a long time. You know, they said that the idea that they want to do a long-term deal with Russell Wilson is the thing that I find most fascinating, because it
they do after the season, right?
Right. So. They say they do. What's interesting to me, though, is that didn't sound like it came from the Russell Wilson camp. Now, maybe, you know, look, he's been covering the Steelers a long time. Maybe he doesn't know what he's getting himself into. And maybe, you know, Mark Rogers got to him quickly and was able to sort of, hey, they've already approached us about a long-term deal. But my guess is, if he's been covering the Steelers for 32 seasons, his contacts are with the Steelers, right? And anything he were to get from Mark Rogers, a reporter like that, who's been around a long time, old school beat reporter, they know exactly how to handle it and when to, how to go fact check it and talk to the folks in the Steelers. So I believe him. If a guy like that says the Steelers are interested in doing a longer term deal with Russ, I believe him. But they also said, and we saw the reports, that they'd be interested in not picking up the extra option year on Justin Fields, but in doing a longer term deal with Fields. They're going to do a long term deal with both of these guys? No way. That doesn't make any sense. So regardless of what they say, regardless of what they're putting out there, here's how I read the situation. This is not report. This is my read on what's happening. Hey, guys, we're going to bring both of you guys in here. Russ, you're going to be the starter. Justin, you're going to back him up. But they're going to be a competition, and we're always going to be watching. And at the end of this year, one of you two guys is going to get a long-term deal from the Steelers. Russ, if you hold the job and for the rest of the year play like you did for all those years in Seattle, show that the legs are still there, show that you can lead, show that you can, you know, matriculate the ball up the field and not have issues with the play clock and all the problems that plagued you in Denver, you're the guy. And we're going to sign you to a long-term deal, and you're going to reclaim your career and your reputation. If you can't do it, see ya. Like, I'm not going to mess around. I got this other dude who's the number 11 pick in the draft, who's been a starter his entire career, who's got the legs and the upside. And the moment you falter, see ya. We're going to give this guy a shot. And hey, Justin, when you get that shot, and if you pull it off, we're going to sign you to a long-term contract. So I'm going to guess that that is the plan of the Steelers. How does that play out? A lot of it sounds like it's up to Russell Wilson. And it's the first time in basically forever that he's had a legitimate backup, quote-unquote, threat behind him.
Yes.
Right?
Right. Well, a high, yes.
I mean, basically
he went
since
out of his
rookie
way to
year,
see that that didn't happen here, right?
Very much
right.
So.
And as soon as they went to look at Josh Allen, his camp got
outraged. And last year in Denver, I mean, he got replaced by Jarrett Stidham, who's in no way the kind of upside that that they have in Justin Fields. So it'll be an interesting one for Russ and how he decides to play it and what he's learned from the last couple of years and whether he's figured out some of it. You know, the Kenny Pickett thing, again, you know, they can say Kenny Pickett decided to be soft, and I'm sure that being in Pittsburgh, that's a big thing. I'm curious how they view Russ, but it does sure feel like that Russ jumped the gun a little bit in getting that information out there before they were, because you got to imagine they would have wanted to tell Kenny Pickett themselves, not to allow Russ to do it. And I would think that if I were the management of the Pittsburgh Steelers, that would rub me the wrong way.
Sure.
I liked what Russ did with the video. I thought it was a good video. It wasn't about him. It was about the Steelers. But if you're getting ahead of the organization before they have a chance to even tell Kenny Pickett.
Well, and then Jerry's article also said that Russ told him in his press conference that one of the first things he did was text Kenny Pickett.
Mm-hmm.
So if you find out on social media that he's coming in and then he's like, hey, glad to be with you and compete. This is going to be great.
That doesn't sound right.
I would be upset too.
Doesn't the amount that we just heard the Steelers were really, really into Fields.
Yeah.
Like how does that make Russ's leash even shorter?
I just get the sense that whatever the Steelers are saying does not necessarily equate to what the Steelers are going to be doing when it's all said and done. So we'll follow it. Not the way we did the last couple of years in Denver. Obviously, it's no longer quite the story that it was. But I am still intrigued. And the Russell Wilson saga is one that I find just fascinating from a human interest standpoint, and where it goes next, I don't know. We'll see. It'll be in Pittsburgh and the world will be watching. Right now, let's finish it up by ranking.
Got a list? Time to put it in order.
Fred Dwarmfor's house. Top five meals that I have ever had.
This is Ranked.
To be honest, that list was really biased.
Every morning at 9:45 on Brock and Salk.
Top 10 list. I'm not buying it.
Ranked.
Yeah, a lot of people wondering why Jerry Dulac called me Nick. I don't know. I can't speak to that.
I definitely checked my text. It says Mike Salk in both of them, but hey.
I mean, it's not like I'm a name personality.
Yeah,
maybe
he heard the Pat McAfee thing and he thought he would try a different.
Right, Nick, Mark, Nick, yeah. Nicholas, Marcus.
It's possible.
I could be a Nick.
I have to say, guys, I'm excited for Ranked today.
Yeah, that's because it was your idea.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's a little part of that that you're leaving out.
That's because it's your idea. All right, well, G came in earlier, unannounced, uninvited, quite frankly, and spent about 10 minutes talking football with us. But along the way, he mentioned Funyuns. He mentioned the Funyuns. I like Funyuns.
I love Funyuns.
They're underrated.
They're good.
They're very underrated. So Maura suggested, how about ranking underrated snack food? Underrated, not necessarily the best snack food, but under the radar, a little bit underrated snack food.
Okay.
And there's a bunch of honorable mentions. The Cheez-It duos. Not all cheese, because Cheez-Its everybody knows. But have you had the duos where they combine two different types of Cheez-Its?
I have not.
No, underrated, man.
I haven't had those. But you know what I've had is they sell the ones that are a little burnt that are good.
No.
Because they have a million flavors now, right? Yes, extra toasty.
The puffy ones.
Yep.
Oh,
they got those too.
Really good.
But they'll get, like, you can get like a bag that has Parmesan and, you know,
sharp cheddar.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Throw them together in there.
Okay. I'm willing to give those a try.
It's really good. Because you mix them. Then you get to see, like, hey, what is it like with, like, 1-1? What about 2-1? What about 3? Like, what's the ratio of, like, that creates the perfect flavor in your mouth? I kind of like that.
I like the Tabasco ones, too.
Mm. I'm going to throw smart food on here. I know that they're a popular snack food, but popcorn in general is underrated, and when you're at a gas station, you don't always think about the smart food. Maybe you're worried it's going to get all over your hands. But if you open the bag and just use the bag like a glass and just sort of drink the smart food out of the bag, you can avoid the whole hand problem.
Totally.
The white cheddar. It's so good.
So I would say I'll put smart food on my list of honorable mentions.
Are goldfish anywhere on here?
No. I feel like they're appropriately rated.
Oh, really?
good, appropriate.
The Frank's Red Hot ones that I just had recently have just suddenly climbed up my
charts. I have not had that. So maybe, Justin, that would help. Justin, you mentioned a Trader Joe's snack food that you feel is necessary.
And this one is weird but delicious. It's their seaweed snacks. Like teriyaki, salty. Yeah.
Very low-cal.
I brought some today.
Low-cal.
Love them. Yep. Yeah.
Healthy.
So good.
I'm gonna mention combos. Here's the great thing about combos. They're good, probably underrated because people don't think about how filling they are compared to a lot of the other snack foods.
I mean, I watched you eat a bag of them for dinner at Power Trip. So, yeah, they're filling.
Very filling.
This is coming from the guy who made fun of me for getting the gas station sandwich.
That's
and
you're
like, true. Yeah, let's go. I need a bag of combos.
When you say dinner, I mean, it was like 2 a.m.
Yeah, well.
Let's be clear.
Well, fair. To be fair, combos probably aren't going to... They could, like a gas station sandwich could make you violently ill.
Right.
Combos
are packaged, thankfully. They're sealed. Come from a factory.
Iron gut, man.
Yeah, exactly. Dude,
the chicken and the biscuit crackers, I forgot about those. Mm.
Maura mentioned the Little Debbie's. Which is your favorite?
Yeah. Oatmeal cream pie.
Oatmeal cream pie. Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Put them on the list of honorable mentions. You also mentioned 100 Grand Bar. Absolutely. Most underrated candy bar, for sure.
That popped up on every underrated snack list that I pulled up.
I'll give you another underrated candy bar, and I feel like it's been kind of lost to history. Don't sleep on a Nestle Crunch, man. They are better than you think. I love Nestle Crunch. There's something, especially when you get the full-size one. Not the, like, thick Halloween version. You got to get a full-size thin one. There's something about the thin chocolate ratio that works really well.
I don't remember the last time I bought a full-size candy bar. I only eat Halloween-sized candy.
I get it. You're like most people.
It's a fun size.
But with that particular candy bar, yeah, pretty good. All right, you ready for the top five?
Yep.
Top five underrated snack foods. Number five, corn nuts. Now,
those are good.
You mentioned that the problem with corn nuts is that they break your teeth.
The flavor.
Oh, all the flavors.
Okay.
I like the chili con limon, something like that. Those are pretty good.
Trader Joe's right now has like a bigger version of those. They're like Peruvian.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Well, yeah. I'm so glad you brought that up.
They're good.
The next time you go to Whole Foods, now you can get those at Trader Joe's. The Whole Foods ones, I will say, are better. They're called Quicos? Kikos?
Oh, the giant Peruvian Inca corn.
Uh-huh. Take a corn nut, make it just as tasty, a little bit bigger, not quite as painful on the teeth.
Yeah, it doesn't quite feel like you're going to lose a teeth.
It is awesome. They're so good. And that's why I was putting them ahead of some of the other honorable mentions.
But do they make a ranch? Because that's kind of the only corn nut that I want.
Well, you could dip it in ranch.
Or I could mix them around the other with actual corn nut.
Just dip that in ranch sauce if you need to. Of course, you could grow up and try blue cheese.
Oh, man. I had some blue cheese and wings at Vindictive this weekend. They're great.
All right, number four, underrated snack food. I'm going off the board here. This isn't in the snack food aisle. In fact, you got to open the freezer, the gross freezer, to get it. But I'm a sucker for one of those drumsticks.
Oh, okay.
The ice cream drumstick. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Ice cream and a cone all put together. Yeah. You don't always think to go over there. Now, they don't always have them, but if they have like an It's It or, you know, some sort of an ice cream sandwich with the chocolate chips around the edge, that's probably even better than the drumstick. But go over to that freezer now and again and just take a look and see what's going on in there.
Well, next time you go back to Trader Joe's, get the ice cream sandwiches with two cookies.
Oh, those are awesome. Yeah, those are really good. Yeah, I've had those.
Okay, drumstick, number four.
That was number four. Number three, I mentioned this to G, and he gave me a funny look, and I get why, because they are a little bland, but they are very addictive, and that's a Bugle. Very addictive. It's probably been a long time since you've had Bugles. Yeah. We have them downstairs here, and I haven't had one in ages, because they're not that good, but they're underrated. Go get yourself a Bugle now and again. You'll eat a whole bag pretty quickly.
Yeah, I haven't had Bugles.
I used
forever.
To love to put those on my fingers when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So that's what they're like
olives. Bugles and black olives.
Yeah.
My dad's weighing in. Just got a text from my dad. Two of them. Love Nestle Crunch. Yeah, no kidding, Dad. But then he says, how about popcorners? Combination of potato chips and popcorn, lots of great flavors. I got to tell you, my kids like those. I think they're disgusting.
Never heard of them.
I feel like I've tried those.
They're terrible.
Never heard of them.
My dad, proving that his taste is just going on them. Hey, my dad's going to try to eat a new cuisine. Because you know how he has the, you know, taste of palate of like a 9-year-old kid in the 80s? No, he's going to try Mexican food.
Oh, wow. Okay.
What do you think?
Starting way back.
He called me on Friday and was like, hey, so I'm going to try Mexican food. Does Chili's count? And I was like, no. First of all, no. And second of all, like, that's Southwest. It's not even Mexican.
I've never been to a Chili's. I want to go to Chili's with Larry.
You can go to Chili's with Larry, but as long as it's not his, like, foray into Mexican food.
Oh, my gosh, no.
I asked my dad if he'd ever had a quesadilla yesterday. He didn't even know what it was.
Wow.
It was shocking.
I don't know what an itzit is.
An itzit? Yeah. It's like a, you know, it's an ice cream cookie sandwich.
Okay.
Yeah. In L.A. They have them at Dodger games. You can get them at Dodger games.
Itzits.
Number one on this. Oh, I'm sorry. We're only on number two. Number two, the Trader Joe's peanut butter pretzels. I know everybody loves them, but it doesn't matter. Like,
peanut butter, almond butter, they're
them.
Both good.
You can't stop eating them.
Yep.
And number one is Funyuns.
There it is. Get the Flamin' Hot Funyuns. Those things are pretty hot.
Never had those.
Pretty good.
Never had the
Funyuns. I haven't had Funyuns since high school.
They're so good.
But I did love them.
They kind of melt in your mouth in a really disgusting but cool way. Pork rinds, by the way, could be on this list also. I like pork rinds. That should have been on.
Gateway into onions, I think, for me as a kid.
Yeah. Funyuns. Pretty good. All right, we got to go. Bump and Stacey, you're coming in next. We will be in tomorrow at 6 a.m., of course. Brock will be back as well. We'll catch you guys then. The hay must be in the barn. See everybody.
This is a job!